ask your questions about the contents of the program this morning. And just in case, I was just clarifying that Daniel gave a tongue-in-cheek comment this morning when he was talking about Peter being the first pope. And some of you may have noticed that. It was an absolute joke, all right? So just in case, for the record, in case there's anyone who's listening to this program elsewhere who didn't see Daniel's face as he was saying that, then we don't want people to take things out of context. Again, that's what we're talking about today. All right, now we're ready for the questions before we start on the afternoon's presentation. And whose question wants to go first? Should we do a priority from front to back? Would that be okay? All right, we'll start off.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Oh.
Steve, go ahead.
They're equal, isn't there?
I'm not prepared to put a dress on just to get my question first. It occurs to me when I was listening to both sides of this argument that the point of setting the precedent might be worth considering, and I wondered whether the church, when it makes decisions, considers precedent when it's making a choice on things, or whether people should be worried about a decision setting a precedent that may lead to other things. How does the church deal with these things?
Yes, definitely. I would say in a committee, most of the time is spent discussing, okay, if we go for this decision, what are the consequences regarding the precedent? I think Bernie would agree that in executive committees we spend a lot of time discussing. For example, I am on the TED sponsorship committee, and we very religiously guard the exceptions to the policy, who we sponsor, who we give money to, or who we don't, exactly because of the precedent. However, in this context, women have been commissioned, let me say this as a foreigner. In English, you can say ordained or commissioned. In most non-Anglo-Saxon languages, you don't have even the two words. You can't distinguish between that, And it did not bring any much disunity to the church. Nowhere in the Bible it says that a commissioned pastor cannot participate in ordination. So these are the things of the church policy. Nowhere in the Bible it says that only the ordained pastors can baptize a member. So yes, we have had commissioned pastors, women as commissioned pastors since 1990, and it did not bring any significant change or disunity to the church.
Do you think then that the church should discount precedent as a means of making decisions?
Not necessarily. I think the precedent is very important. So there is always sometimes the consequence. If we go this way, what will be the consequence of that?
Yes, good afternoon. My question is regarding the role of the ordained pastor. What was it like when the church initially started, and what change have been made since? Because maybe the difference of opinion in the church is we don't fully understand what ordained pastors do and what the non-ordained ones do, and see how it would impact if females are ordained or not. Because sometimes I don't know if every church member actually knows exactly what the ordained ones do and
The problem with that question is we don't know what was this like when the church started. If you read Acts 6, it seems from the text that the whole congregation put their hands on the deacons on the seventh.
No, I'm talking about the church. When the church started, what the ordained ones did and the non-ordained ones.
The Adventist pioneers were not concerned with this question until they started to get problem with diverse views, the breakaway groups within Adventism, when they said, actually, we need to bring in some credentials. We need to guard who has the access to the pulpit and who is representing the church with the traveling pastors. You know, do they speak for the church or do they represent themselves? But part of the problem was that they just took over from whatever was the practice in Methodist Church or the Christian Connection Church. If you go to the TED document on the website, ted-adventist.org, there you click, there is a link to the TED document on ordination. There is the whole chapter on the history showing how Adventist just, as we said yesterday in Edinburgh regarding the salvation, soteriology, they did not do an in-depth study of soteriology, how people are saved. They just took it over from the prevailing view, and the same with ordination. They just took it over from the churches from which they came from.
No, I was just asking the functions, for example, in terms of help, in terms of marriage, in terms of carrying out. I was just asking the functions.
They just took over whatever the Methodist Church was doing as their practice without any in-depth study.
And so currently, what can an ordained pastor do that an unordained pastor can't do in the Adventist Church?
No, the ordained elder can marry. The ordained pastor can establish and disband the church, which nobody else can, and the ordained pastor can participate in the ordination ceremony, laying on of hands on the future ordained pastors. Everything else can be done by an ordained elder or a commissioned woman pastor. An elder can do the baptism.
Yes. Permission.
With the permission from the conference. Yeah, of course.
Just as I put that one in quickly.
Okay.
Another question.
Another question. I am almost convinced that our women are going to be ordained. But looking at the creation, fall, and then the redemption, I have a little problem at the redemption. Christ came and everything is equal. But when he was selecting the disciples, he chose 12 of them. No woman. And then, even if we can even look at it, Judas, you know, went out and we were going to look for another one.
Him, they replaced him with
and
a
no
man.
Chance was given to a woman. So, how do you maybe explain a bit of that?
Okay, once again, I'm not sure I want to go into that because I don't want to discuss the merits of the two positions. My goal was, do you understand how come that people read the same Bible and yet come to different conclusions? Do you understand that people love Jesus the same, yet they are on a different side of the barricades? Now, for the brevity of time, this is what the proponents would say. Jesus started his ministry not when he was 12. Remember when he was in the temple and understood when he saw the priest killing the lamb and he said, oh, that's me. He got the message when he was 12. Yet he did not start preaching until he was 30. Why? Because in that culture, unless you have the beard like the brother here, nobody's going to take you seriously. You are not a rabbi. You're a little boy. He walked in sandals. He had a beard. So he works within the constraints of the culture. He appointed 12 Jewish males. Now, Bernie is English, I am Czech or Slovak. No, we are not Jews. So if you argue that only Jews have been ordained by Jesus, that only they can be the ordained pastors, how far are you going to get? But remember, you look at his ministry. Luke 8:3. And in his circle was where? Many women who paid the per diem. Now, Jesus is a rabbi who is sustained by the money of women. Now, no rabbi of his day would do that. Yet Jesus does it. And when Martha says, tell Mary her place is in the kitchen, that's the prevailing thinking of the day. He says, no. In my community, her place is being my disciple. So he gives clear clues where he stands on the issues. And it points, even as the preacher of the resurrection, the most important news. A woman that in that society her testimony would not be even valid. Yet he sends her as a preacher. So he gives enough clues to show this is how I see, this is where I stand. And you can't use the argument that he appointed 12 males, because then you would have to say all the ordained pastors have to be Jewish, because all the 12 were Jewish. Yet we ordain English and Czech and French and Romanian. Even I participated in that one with training in South Africa, etc. Okay, but you understand, I don't want to debate the merits of the two positions, because you know it's irrelevant for this debate where you stand. God bless you. If that's your position, thank Jesus. Just be open to understand that somebody can come to a different conclusion than you do, and it does not mean that they don't see the truth, it doesn't mean that they don't love Jesus, it just means that they have a different operating system. One is a PC and the other is Apple. Okay? There are two different operating systems.
Would I be right, do you think? I'm finding this hard to make a question. It would seem from what you said about the proponents of women's ordination that they would be very happy with the question that's been put to the General Conference, in that it allows different cultures to choose what they want. Is that how you read it?
Yes.
So basically, if this went through, then the proponents of female ordination would have won.
If you see it as a question of winning and losing, yes.
Well, many people do, I'm sure. Because it's a question of whether you're right or wrong, isn't it? This is how most people see it.
But that's exactly
what
I'm arguing.
Is it right or is it wrong, according to the Bible or according to what God wants or so? So.
But that's what I'm going to argue, that's the wrong way to see it, because this is not a win or lose issue. This is not what is right. This is the issue, how do we administratively manage certain applications in the Church of Christ? And the interesting thing is that the way it's worded, it's a trust issue. Do we trust that somebody in a different part of the world can make a good decision for their territory? So do we trust that people of the South Asia division can make a good decision for India? They don't even ask me what I think that he should do in India. They ask me, do you think that the representatives of the church in India can make a good decision for India? Now, they are not going to impose what you are supposed to do in Scotland. You know, no Westminster is going to tell you this is what you do in Scotland. No, you decide in Scotland what you do in Scotland. And that's how the question is worked out.
So what you would say is it's similar to, I don't know which country and islands it is, there were some islands in the Pacific that now meet on Sunday, because
yes,
that is the Sabbath, continuity of the Sabbath. Now that was decided locally,
yes,
rather than at the General Conference. So presumably you're saying we can decide things locally.
Yeah, because the way it's formulated is an administrative issue. Remember, in this church you cannot vote on theology. You can't have the question, do you want Jesus to come soon? Let's vote on that. And imagine that say, oh no, we have too many plans, let's cancel the second coming. No, you can't vote on that. You can't vote whether the Sabbath is the seventh day of the week. So you can vote on the questions of administration. You can vote, do we start the Sabbath school in Creve Church at 10 or 10:30? Now you can vote on that, because there is no right or wrong answer. It's just a consensus of the community, and 51% of the vote carries the day. And so that's why it's worded this way, as an administrative issue. It's not worded as a theological issue, because after the TOSC, after the Theology of Ordination Study Committee, if you want to know what is the theology, read the arguments, read the documents. But we discover that we cannot decide the question on the basis of theology, of exegesis. We can't. Okay, we had 106 members of the TOSC, two-thirds saw it one way, one-third saw it another way. Now, don't read too much into the numbers, because there was no representative way to choose the group. It was just appointed. So if it was appointed differently, the numbers would be different. And we came to the conclusion, at this point of time, we can't decide this on the matter of theology, on the matter of exegesis. We can't. Some have strong convictions on one side, others have strong convictions on the other side. And that's why this morning I try to present to you and say, do you understand why the same people read the same book yet come to a two totally opposing conclusions?
Whoops. I think what you've just said there at the end is perhaps something which needs to be emphasized extremely, as being extremely important, because it filters through to everything else. There's been a few talks here about slippery slope arguments. We would not be having this discussion were we to, were the theological difference be the Sabbath, for example. We would not be having this discussion.
No.
Because we consider that to be a truth issue.
Yes.
The difference we have here is we do not consider this to be a truth issue.
And secondly, we don't consider this to be a fundamental beliefs issue.
Right. So this
while the Sabbath is a question, yes, of fundamental beliefs for Adventists.
It's literally an existential question,
yes,
for Adventism. It exists in our name.
Yes.
If we did not... So what we are... And I think what we have to decide in our own head... I'm thinking back to Lou's discussions many years ago on the circles of your faith, the stuff that's core in the middle, moving outwards to the things you're really not quite so sure about, to get out to the stuff that you really don't think matters, is where does this issue lie within your own head? I think there are some folk for whom the divide between what is true and what is untrue is absolute and clear, and there's a stone wall circling it. And those people are going to struggle with this because this is a truth issue.
Yes.
And stop pretending that it isn't. There are others for whom the difference between the stone citadel in the middle in which lives the Sabbath and the second coming and the outer fields where I don't care is a long and sometimes literally slippery slope. And if your view is that this... I mean, my view is I'm for it. I think it would be a good thing to do. And in my culture, where I live, it's an issue that we don't do this. So we are seen as being sexist, ignorant, backwards,
yes,
because we don't do this.
Because in European Union, it's illegal to discriminate,
yes,
on things that people cannot change.
And if my daughter was here today, you'd get a thorough lecture on,
yes,
on what's wrong with you lot.
Sure. So in European Union, you can't distinguish on the basis of the skin color because you didn't choose that. And you can't distinguish on the basis of gender because you didn't choose that. So if you didn't choose something, you can't discriminate on that basis.
Right. But I
let me tell you, in Norway, in 2012, the pastors decided if our colleagues, women, cannot be ordained, no more ordinations in our union until July 2015. Because for them, it's a fairness issue. It's not a theology issue. And they said, if the ladies who studied with us, who work with us, who give Bible studies, can't do the same as we do, this is not fair. So no more ordination. We give the church until July 2015 to sort it out. But if they don't, they had plenty of time since 1990, then after July we are going to go ahead and do it anyway, because for us this is not disobedience, this is not wrong theology, for us it's a fairness issue.
Right.
And the same in Denmark as well. Norway and Denmark put on hold ordinations until July 2015.
An interesting take, but I think each of us in our own heads has to decide if this is an issue that's inside a stone wall or not. And the way you're talking, you think it's outside the stone wall. It's an issue that good, honest people can come to opposite conclusions about,
yes,
without it being a problem.
And it's not only the way I am talking. I don't want you to take the word of Daniel Duda on that. It's the way how 28 fundamental beliefs are worded. We don't have a fundamental belief, number 29, on ordination. Okay. We agree that this is not a fundamental issue for Adventism.
We understand that it would not be wise to agree with ordination of women in a culture which is not ready for that. And we look in Scotland, for example, and we see the leader of SNP party is a woman, or in England they had a prime minister a woman.
And the queen, and we say,
oh, it's all right to have women ordained here, but it's not about the culture of the secular society, isn't it? It's about the culture of the members of the church. And when you look at the structure of the church in UK, who are the members actually? Scots and Britons? No. Are actually immigrants, majority of them, from this kind of countries where actually the mentality is quite different. So how is the church here going to check on the status of the culture of the church here? Are you going to make a kind of survey? Or so the question is the culture here ready for this? Is it in favor for ordination of women or not? This is one of the questions.
Wow, that's a difficult one, because you strike at the essence of the what it means to be British. Does it mean that you live on British Isles, which is an inclusive culture? As I was driving on Friday to Scotland, I listened to LBC, and there was a very interesting discussion on Judaism, you know, Orthodox Judaism forbidding women to be in the gym with males, and so they have a segregated gym. And people were calling in and saying, wait a minute, we are in British culture, which is inclusive by nature, and you can't have this rule which, you know, rules out one segment of population against their choice. Now, if they decide not to drive the cars, which is how these Orthodox Jews argued, that's their choice. But once it's imposed on somebody else, this is against the inclusiveness of the British culture. And yes, this is something that the British Union Executive Committee needs to decide. On the other hand, probably what was the culture of the Jamaican farm in 1958 should not be what happens in London in 2015. You know, are we here to preserve the culture of what was back home in the good old days? Or is the good old days just the trick that the mind is playing on us? And in this sense, you know, as we mentioned, you know, 1920s in the British culture are not that different from 1920s in the West Indies culture. Oh, well, let's go back to the lady again, because she wanted to say something. But this is something for the British Union Executive Committee to consider.
And you said you are not going to decide, I mean, every division is not going to decide based only on theological and exegetical aspects, because it will not lead kind of anywhere. What about the practicality of the issue? One of the aspects, for example, it's in terms of human resources and financial aspects. What the church deals with men who cannot be ordained because they don't have places, there are not jobs enough for them. Graduates from theological institutes who are not still employed, even in countries like Romania, where they have plenty churches with so many members, they can't be employed. And if in this, let's say, job market, you increase the competition, adding women to that, how is this going to, how the problem is going to be solved? Actually, the problem is increased. Plus, from financial point of view, here in Scotland, for example, the church couldn't afford to have a full-time secretary, a woman. To not mention, if we go further, to have an assistant pastor or a minister. From financial point of view, it doesn't work. So actually, when we say, oh, let's ordain women in Scotland or UK, when the church actually doesn't have the resources to do that financially, is it this only a kind of a balloon, a kind of false hope given to women that actually is not going to work? A woman will go to study the theology for 3 years, 4 years, and at the end of all that effort and money invested, actually is nothing for her to be employed for.
Regarding the first question, depends where you are, on the right or on the left of the political spectrum. Generally, in capitalism, if you increase the competition, you get a better product. So, but this is not the question of competition, it's a question of God's calling. Back to Steve's daughter, if she says, you know, God is calling me to do this, as Peter said, who am I to prevent, you know, to be a hindrance to what the Holy Spirit is doing? About 1/3 of theology students at Newbold are girls, you know. Now, we are not going to decide it on pragmatic terms. The fact whether Scottish Mission has money to employ or not is besides the point. We need to do what we consider is the proper thing. And then once you make the decision, in due time you will have the capable girls applying and competing for the jobs. Now, if you send the signal you are not welcome and you should not be studying in the seminary because you only think that God is calling you but you misunderstood something, now what kind of signal are we sending out? And back to the culture and the society, you know, it would be unthinkable if you gave Bible studies to your neighbor and appealed to them that they should join God's remnant church, and they say to you, what are you trying to tell me? You still keep slaves at home. Why should I join you? Now, and they say, wait a minute. In the society, everybody's on the same level, and yet you still consider women to be the second-class members or citizens or, you know, clergy, then it's going to hamper your influence in the society. Remember back when Paul says, make sure that the preaching of the gospel is not hindered. So when the man comes into the congregation and sees, oh, how come that she's speaking like that? My wife never speaks like that. Oh, I know why. Because she must have gotten the education, and the only girls that got the education in that society were the prostitutes, so they can entice and seduce the males. So let's not make the hindrance in the culture. Okay, let's take two more, and then I need to go to the most important part of the presentation, because this was only the introduction.
I don't want to ask you a question. I'm just going to make a point.
Okay.
And I just want to say that in the morning you made a very pertinent point about the New Testament pushing the gospel forward.
Yes.
And I think this is not pushing the gospel forward in the way God wants it to be done.
Yeah. I'm not sure I would argue with what God wants to do, because each side can do that, but certainly is not spreading the news away. It's trying to contain it in one place. Yes.
Yeah,